Coming up on New York Now, Governor Cuomo gives his 8th State of the State speech.
We have unprecedented challenges ahead on every level. And with these challenges at this moment, it requires stark candor and bold action.
We'll have reaction from lawmakers.
Well, I absolutely think he was focusing on his national aspirations.
And analysis at the Reporters Roundtable.
This was a very liberal speech, and by attacking the federal government the way he did and taking on some other things, that was designed to shore it up. And then, it, of course, it opens the door potentially for a 2020 presidential run.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hello and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. It's going to be a long year, so why not the longest State of the State ever?
92 minutes. Lots to unpack in our headlines. Early on in his speech, Andrew Cuomo warned the assembled group at the Empire State Plaza, including lawmakers, that the next 12 months would be difficult.
2018 may be the toughest year New York has faced in modern political history. And the job you're going to have to do may be the job that the hardest job done by any legislative body to sit in modern political history. We have unprecedented challenges ahead on every level. And with these challenges at this moment, it requires stark candor and bold action.
He broke the challenges down into what he called a three-front war. First up, tackling discrimination and sexism across the state. You may remember from our program last month, the governor made news in the way he answered reporter Karen DeWitt's question on what policy changes may be coming from the second floor regarding sexual harassment.
When you say it's state government, you do a disservice to women, with all due respect, even though you're a woman.
Just name one thing.
It's called the State of the State.
Tuesday in Albany, he detailed his proposal.
No taxpayer funds should be used to pay for any public official's sexual harassment or misconduct, period. It is the bad act of the individual. Let the individual pay. I propose that no state or local government enter into a secret non-disclosure agreement. We can protect a victim's identity and privacy, but the taxpayers have a right to know that that agreement exists and that their funds were used to pay for that agreement.
Cuomo then moved on to changes he wanted to see made in the criminal justice system.
The blunt, ugly reality is that too often, if you can make bail, you are set free, and if you are too poor to make bail, you are punished. We must reform our bail system so that a person is only held if a judge finds either a significant flight risk or a real threat to public safety. If so, they should be held in preventive detention, whether they are rich or poor, black or white. But if not, they should be released on their own recognizance, whether they are rich or poor, black or white. That is only fair.
He then highlighted the case of Khalif Browder, an African American that spent 3 years at Rikers Island waiting for his court date. He ended up taking his own life in jail. Cuomo brought his brother to the speech.
Akeem, I want you to know that your brother did not die in vain. Sometimes the Lord works in strange ways, but he opened our eyes to the urgent need for real reform. The state correction law authorizes the state to regulate local jails. We must act with a new urgency to safeguard the rights of all New Yorkers who have been too long neglected. It's a statewide problem, and we will address it. and you have my word on that.
The second part of his outline bunched several different problems together, some unrelated, addressing the rise in terrorism, environmental change, the opioid crisis, along with what he called the distortion of manipulation of elections by big donors, foreign money, and social media advertising. Moving on to transportation issues, the governor pledged to bring cashless tolling to the thruway by 2020 and asked the Port Authority to do the same to their crossings, which includes the George Washington Bridge and the Holland and Lincoln Tunnels. He then addressed one of his biggest headaches in the past year, the New York City subway system.
We need short-term funding this year to do emergency repairs and to install the new technology for a long-term solution. We also need long-term funding that is fair to all and also addresses the growing traffic and population problems. The Fix New York panel will shortly present a report that will have several options for the legislature to consider. We will have new technology installed which will offer a variety of alternatives, defining an exclusive zone in Manhattan where additional charges could be paid. These are difficult choices, but difficult choices do not get easier by ignoring them. They only get harder. And in the meantime, cheap political slogans are just that. Cheap political slogans. It's not a real policy or policy discussion. And that's what we need.
The final challenge the governor outlined was from the nation's capital.
Washington's tax plan now uses New York and California as piggy banks to finance tax cuts for Republican states. New York will pay an additional $14 billion on top of the $48 billion that we currently pay. Remember the old adage, robbing Peter to pay Paul? Well, they changed it. They're now robbing the blue states to pay for the red states. It is crass, it is ugly, it is divisive, it is partisan legislating, it is an economic civil war. And make no mistake, they are aiming to hurt us. This could cause people to leave the state of New York. And it could reduce our ability to attract business. We must take dramatic action to save ourselves and preserve our state's economy. We have a three-point strategy to address the federal assault. First, we believe it is illegal, and we will challenge it in court as unconstitutional. Second, we will lead the resistance to this injustice and start our own repeal and replace effort, launching a tax fairness for all campaign. We begin today, and we will not stop until economic justice is restored for every state and every taxpayer in the state of New York. Third, as Washington has shot an arrow aimed at New York State's economic heart, the best plan is to get out of the way before it hits. So we are exploring the feasibility of a major shift. Different states have different tax structures. Some use a gross receipts tax. Some have a severance tax. We are developing a plan to restructure our tax code to reduce reliance on our current income tax system and adopt a statewide payroll tax system. I know that this is an ambitious agenda, and I know it's probably the most challenging agenda that I have ever put forth. But these are challenging times, and we have to rise to the challenge for the very survival of our state. A $4 billion deficit, economic challenges, social wrongs, and a federal assault, all at once.
The governor didn't mention President Donald Trump by name until the end of his speech.
It is our founding fathers' essential wisdom, summed up in just three words. E pluribus unum, out of many, one. So fundamental to the American idea that in 1782, they stitched the words on the Great Seal of the United States. And that seal and those words are on the flag that has hung in the Oval Office every day since. Right behind President Trump's desk. To find the way forward, the president only needs to turn around.
We got reaction afterward outside the convention center.
I think one of the things that I wish there had been a lot more discussion on is the actual state of New York and how we run our own government. Like, what are we doing on transportation? What are we doing on environment? What are we doing on healthcare? Are we taking a critical look at every dollar we spend and see if we're spending money wisely? So a tremendous amount of focus on the federal government, and you clearly know I'm against a lot of the provisions that were enacted in the tax bill because I don't think they're good for New York. But when we spend well over $150 billion of taxpayers' money, first thing we should be looking at is what are we doing in our own state?
I absolutely thank you for focusing on his national aspirations. And certainly, this was a self-promotion speech at times, you know, running through the slides about all the different building and infrastructure projects, which is millions of taxpayer dollars, and what's really been the accountability about jobs, and then so much rhetoric on, and even showing the Oval Office. I just think that was an over-the-top approach when we're really trying to focus on New York State.
It was probably one of his better speeches. It outlined the stark challenges that the state is facing in terms of our financial situation, the effect that Washington is going to have on us. We did take a bit of a victory lap, and I think it was important that he said we. He gave a lot of credit to the legislature for helping deliver on a lot of these things, and I think that's really key.
The day after, good government groups held a press conference in the Capitol, unveiling what they're calling a roadmap to curbing corruption. Blair Horner of NYPERG says despite the relatively little time spent on ethics reform during the State of the State, he's still confident this could be a year for real legislative change.
I'll view this as like a fine wine. Some proposals need aging. And that this year is the year where we pop the cork because of these corruption cases. Every month, there's going to be a new spat of stories about a particular issue. And we have them all listed here. Every single month, for each month of the legislative session, a new trial will commence. And just to be clear, everyone's entitled to their presumption of innocence, and it may turn out that all of these individuals be innocent. But the picture they will paint of how Albany operates is not going to be pretty, and this is an election year. Everyone has promised that they're going to fix Albany. Now's the year to do it.
The group put up a calendar highlighting the 6 corruption trials coming up later this year, including the one for former Cuomo aide Joe Prococo. That starts in 2 weeks in New York City. Blair Horner, always the optimist. Let's get some analysis of the state of the state now by sending it on over to the Reporters Roundtable. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, is our moderator.
All right, it takes a special breed of reporter to venture outside when the temperature hovers around 0 degrees. I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by two of them. Ken Lovett from the Daily News and Rick Carlin from my own paper, the Times Union. All right, so we just saw large excerpts from the governor's 8th and longest State of the State address. Is it fair to say that federal issues dominated the rhetoric, Ken?
Oh, absolutely. I think this was a speech that was really done on two tracks. It was designed to help him in 2018. We all know that he has problems on the left and there's issues of a potential primary. This was a very liberal speech, and by attacking the federal government the way he did and taking on some other things, that was designed to shore it up. And then, it opens the door potentially for a 2020 presidential run. But, you know, focusing on the federal tax code that he's been doing for a while, focusing on health care cuts, actually attacking Donald Trump by name, that was a surprise.
I think that was a first.
Yeah, so it was. It was a federal, and that was the complaint by the Republicans. It wasn't a state of the state. It was more like a state of the union.
And it follows the tax code speeches. He gave probably 3 or 4 or 5 more of speeches over the phone. He did a lot of phone conferences just railing against the Republican tax plan and what it would do to New York State. So he's been on that roll for a while. So that makes sense that he would follow through with this in the state of the state.
The governor sort of teased it before, but he was more explicit this time around that the state is going to explore legal options, will sue over claiming that that the way that the tax code curtails the deduction for state and for state and local taxes, the deduction that is a violation of states' rights, which is interesting to hear from a Democratic,
very conservative Republican meme. But,
right, or a Southern Democrat in the 1950s. Yeah. And also violates
lawsuit.
Equal protection. Yeah, it seems like a real list.
Yeah, it's hard to see. Because it doesn't hurt a protective class. He's saying it pits, you know, Democratic states versus red states, but that's politics. And you may not like the tax policy, but it's a tax policy. And I think a lot of people don't expect it'll be a successful suit, which is why they're also looking at potential changes to the New York tax code to see if they can lessen the impact on New Yorkers.
And that's going to be difficult, too. The idea is to take the payroll taxes instead of workers, people paying income taxes, they would pay a quote-unquote a payroll tax, which remains deductible under the federal code. And you would flip it around where the employer would then pay an income tax. But there's all sorts of complications. It's a huge paperwork mess that businesses are facing.
They're
looking at doing that.
There was far less rhetoric on ethics reform this time around. The day after, a lot of the good government groups gathered and pointed out that this could be another what they referred to as a Watergate moment, because every month of the first 6 months of 2018 is going to see the commencement of a new significant corruption trial.
I thought it was going to be a Watergate moment when Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos, who were the leaders of the Assembly and Senate respectively a couple of years ago, were both indicted within months of each other, and nothing really happened. I can't imagine. It is an election year, but they've been reluctant to do a lot of the things that the governor has proposed, and frankly, the governor hasn't really pushed a lot of the things that he proposed. You know, he puts it out there, but he doesn't bring it up again. He doesn't barnstorm for it. He doesn't push for it behind closed doors in negotiations. And I think it's going to be extremely difficult to get an ethics package again.
I think it was someone from the League of Women Voters noted that she was tweeting as the governor was talking about some of the ethics reforms, and by the time she got done tweeting it, he was on to another topic. So it was very much a cursory acknowledgement of this, but it certainly wasn't the highlight of this speech.
And no acknowledgement that a bunch of people tied to him, including his former aide, Joe Prococo, are about to go to trial for corruption. You know, there was no inward looking. There was no blame. And there was no blame or responsibility on any of it. You know, the state is facing a $4 billion deficit. There was no talk about cutting. There was no talk about reducing, holding spending. It was all the federal government, and in this case, it was the it's corruption. But he didn't look inward at all.
Ironically, part of that deficit is because of a tax cut that the governor and the legislature approved previously that goes into effect this year. Just people are talking about the federal deficit that's going to come from the federal tax cut, but New York is going to. The state deficit is being added to because of a tax cut as well.
If there was no exploitation of the Watergate moment, there was definitely a deployment of the Harvey Weinstein moment in terms of the governor's proposals to change policy on how the state and how private business deals with sexual harassment.
Yeah, this was an issue he had promised, and not one of his greater moments, but he had promised that he would address it in the State of the State. And the day before the State of the State, he put out a package. Probably the most noteworthy one was that lawmakers would be held responsible for any settlements financially rather than state taxpayers. If they agree to a settlement or they're found to have sexually harassed someone, that public officials would have to pay for those settlements out of their own pocket.
You wonder what will happen. Will there be settlements like this, or will they decide to maybe to take it to trial in some cases? There could be all sorts of unintended consequences, too.
Certainly, the biggest issue in New York City over the course of the last year or so has been the deterioration of the subway system. There were complaints after the speech that the governor's solutions for dealing with transit problems were sketchy in the speech. Are we going to see perhaps more in the budget plan?
We're supposed to. He had talked about announcing some kind of congestion pricing plan within the State of the State, and instead of that, the money would be charged. You'd be paid extra. You'd have to pay extra to go into busy parts of Manhattan during peak hours, and that money would then go to help fund the subways. The governor has been talking about it. The legislature is less inclined to do it, but he never really brought it up. He kind of danced around it, and he said a panel, the Fix New York panel that he has, will come up with some recommendations in the near future that the legislature can deal with. So who knows? But it was really surprising for the man who declared, you know, such a problem, a state of emergency with the subways. He gave probably less time to that than he did to ethics reform.
I think that speaks to the enduring power of some of the Republican senators who represent areas around the city in the suburbs and Long Island, mostly Long Island. They're not going to like this, and the governor knows that, and they can still hold up the works.
But it's not just the Republicans.
Yeah.
It's mostly the Democrats in the outer boroughs.
Yeah.
And they don't like the idea of having to pay more to go into the city.
Yeah.
The new year is not beginning happily for State Republican Chairman Ed Cox, whose bench of potential candidates to take on the governor in November keeps getting smaller and smaller.
Maybe you could put a little 1-800 number people can call in and offer to run, because Harry Wilson, who was the guy, this is the guy everyone said is the best Republican to take on Cuomo on New Year's Eve. I found out that he wasn't running, and he says that it's his family, and he has a young family. Several are getting ready to go to college, and he doesn't want to lose that time with them. And then a few days later, Marcus Molinaro, who's seen as a real up-and-comer, he's the Dutchess County executive, he's an up-and-comer for the GOP. He announced the same thing, and he had told me on a couple of days prior that he was having a lot of the same concerns that Harry Wilson did, because he has three kids, including a one-year-old.
They don't think they can win. And obviously, previously to that, Rob Astorino was essentially knocked out of the race when he lost his reelection bid in Westchester County as the county executive.
So now you're down to Minority Leader Brian Culp, who doesn't have any
Who was on the stage with the governor for the state
and
of the state.
Who has very little money,
very little name recognition.
And you have Senate Deputy Majority Leader John DeFrancisco, who had actually put up a good fight, but whether he can raise money and make a case.
He hasn't announced yet. He's expressed an interest in it.
And you have Joel Giambra, who is former Erie County executive, who said he is going to run, but this is a guy who recently raised money for Cuomo, Bill de Blasio, and Hillary Clinton. It's a tough sell
really
with Republicans.
It really seems that they need someone from downstate for the name recognition, where New York City is going to be, they're going to go for the Democrat no matter what. Urban Buffalo will go Democratic, but you know the areas that are in play are the ring suburbs of New York City. Yeah, Long Island, Westchester, that area.
They need
to find someone from there if they have any chance at all.
That is where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much on this very cold day to Ken Lovett of the Daily News and Rick Carlin of the Times Union. We appreciate the good analysis. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
All right, thanks, Casey. This week in our poll question, we're asking, what did you think of the governor's state of the state? Check out our choices online at nynow.org. Let us know what you liked or didn't like. Our final poll question of 2017 wanted to know which political race you were most looking forward to in 2018. And most people said, probably not a surprise, the race for governor. Gary in Brooklyn watching on WNET told us, normally I would say the governor's race. In 2018, however, much more is at stake in the midterm congressional races. Perhaps a rollback of the draconian measures just put into place. And finally, Matt in the Albany County city of Waterville Eats. Perhaps the trials of one-time associates of Andrew Cuomo will finally bring some transparency to the workings of his administration. We appreciate all those who took the time to vote. The website, again, is nynow.org. By the way, the entire State of the State speech, along with our live coverage, is up on our website for viewing. You can also follow links to us on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. There's a link to the Capital Confidential blog there as well, also available by heading to timesunion.com. Casey back with us on set with an update to a story we first brought viewers in 2013.
That was the year, summer of 2013, that the Schenectady-based food truck called the Wandering Dago brought suit against the state because it was barred from selling its wares at the Saratoga Racecourse and on the Empire State Plaza as part of the Office of General Services summer lunch program. Basically, the owners of the cart say, yes, they use an epithet for Italians in their name that some find offensive. They they see it as a tribute to their ancestors. And a lower court ultimately found that the state was appropriate in barring them. The food truck settled with NYRA, but the case against the leaders of OGS went on. And just this Wednesday, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals found that, in fact, New York State had engaged in viewpoint discrimination by turning them aside simply based on their name. So a big victory for the Wandering Dago after now almost 5 years in court.
Viewpoint discrimination, interesting term.
It essentially means that they are, the state discriminated against them based on nothing more than the state's dislike of its name. And of course, what the court said is that if consumers want to shut down a business like the Wandering Dago with a potentially offensive name, they cannot buy their wares. Fascinating. All right, we say goodbye today with footage of ice skaters on the historic Lake Placid Oval, where Americans Jack Shea and Eric Heiden won gold medals in speed skating. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching. We hope to see you next weekend on your local PBS station or on nynow.org. And in the words of the late Tim Russert, go Bills.